This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Today, two topics directly related to the beautification of Iowa, one dealing with native plants and the other, a manipulation of nature to help us understand the power of an Iowa river. This week on the UNI campus, representatives from 45 Iowa counties are picking up $250,000 worth of native seeds. They'll plant the grasses and flowers, mostly near roadsides, to give us all a splash of color to help revive species that were once common in the state. Kirk Henderson, UNI's Tall Grass Prairie Center, will give us the story on how 1,000 Iowa acres will be beautified. And then we'll hear from a Louisiana artist who usually paints but is now constructing Slipstream at a Cedar Rapids Art Center. Brian Guidry is collecting discarded items from the Cedar River and the historic 2008 flood to create the installation. You'll be able to see it Saturday. Talk of Iowa begins at 5 minutes following news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. In Cedar Falls, there's truckloads of wild native seeds that are being handed out to county roadside managers from around the state. The almost $250,000 worth of prairie grass and wildflower seeds will provide beautification and maintenance reduction on more than 1,000 acres of county road right-of-way. On this final day of the distribution, I talked to Kirk Henderson, roadside program manager at the University of Northern Iowa. Kirk, Iowa's county roadside managers will be very busy arriving in Cedar Falls to the UNI campus to pick up almost $250,000 worth of native seeds. So tell us what this is all about.
Okay, we call this project roadside beautification, maintenance reduction, county highways. And we'll have a representative from 45 different counties. They come from all over the state. And each one will come up here and take home a share of this seed purchase. Like you say, since you mentioned the large amount of money that's being spent on this seed, $225,000, I have to point out, doing a single giant purchase on behalf of all these counties allows us to get so much more seed for our money. You know, when you do a purchase that size and it goes out for bids among all the Iowa growers and a few from neighboring states will bid this project also, we really get a lot of seed for the money. And every dollar that's spent from that, from those, they are Iowa DOT transportation enhancement dollars. And it all goes for seed on this project. And, you know, like I said, we call it beautification, maintenance reduction. The prairie, it's a mix of prairie species, about 10 different prairie grasses and 27 different wildflower species. Makes for a very rich mix, a lot of color, a lot of variety in shapes and sizes out there. And we're trying to create a diverse plant community in the roadside using these very durable and long-lived perennial plants.
So these are perennials then?
Yeah. There's one annual in our whole mix of these native species. The rest of them are long-lived perennials. It's the same plant, the same grass, the same wildflower then that comes back year after year. And, you know, that's part of where you wind up with a lower maintenance roadside. These plants have such deep roots, and they go down deep. They're finding water in our hottest, driest parts of the summer. They're out there doing just fine, and that's because they're from the Iowa prairie. They evolved here over thousands of years and are very nicely adapted to our climate, to the growing conditions that we've got.
So somebody has managed to save all of these seeds for a while, at least. I mean, who is actually producing the seed? Where are you buying it from?
Yeah, it's a neat thing. It's 30 years ago, you would have had to go out of state to find this much native seed. But partly due to the demand created by what we're doing in roadsides, both at the state and county level, an industry has grown up around that. And we now have probably a half a dozen producers in the state, some larger than others, that you can go to and order a very nice mix, a lot of different species, and they are all coming, you know, they are all descended from actual, you know, from plants from the actual Iowa prairie. We still have, even though most of the Iowa prairie is long gone, we still have a few very small scattered prairie remnants, and that's where the foundation seed came from for this, for what's being mass produced now. It was hand collected, little bitty collections. Many of them came to you and I as part of another program we have here, the Iowa Ecotype Project, and where they were germinated in the greenhouse, hand transplanted by student labor onto some plots we have here on campus, and that's how the initial increase was done of seed that then once it was increased to maybe where we had 2 or 3 pounds of a species, then that seed was released to a private grower and then left up to them to mass produce and market the seed.
Kirk, when these county roadside managers arrive, what are they bringing? A couple of trucks with them? I mean, how many pounds of seed are we talking about here?
The average county goes home with maybe 20 acres worth is
okay.
All. You know, it's not a huge amount. They're picking, you know, this seed at the county level is used on bare soil where the engineer has got some kind of road project going, or they've had to do a ditch clean out to restore drainage. And, you know, they don't generally disturb that many acres of roadside in a year. And so the county leaves here with 10, 20, 30 acres worth of seed. A couple will get 40 acres worth. One gets 100 acres a year. They're kind of busy in that county. But the 30 acres worth of seed will fill a full-size pickup bed pretty full. Yeah, that's so most of the counties show up with a pickup, and that handles what they're going home with. But we've got right now, the day before the counties start arriving, there's 20,000 pounds of seed filling two bays of the warehouse out back behind the Tallgrass Prairie Center here at UNI.
So do they know exactly what they're getting? Do you have, there's just a wild, crazy mix of all sorts of different species. Do you have a list of these plants and flowers?
Yeah, that's a good question. We want them to have some say-so about where what gets planted. So the species are bagged individually. They'll go home with a 25-pound bag of little blue stem, and then that's their little blue stem for 10 acres worth of right-of-way. And they will have an individual bag for Prairie Blazing Star and Pale Purple Coneflower. And then what that does, the county has to mix it themselves, so there's a little bit of labor, but it gives them the say-so, or they can decide themselves, okay, here's a ditch, it's pretty far out of the way, not a high-traffic road, maybe we'll just put mostly grasses in that location and save the wildflower seed and beef up this more high-profile slope, you know, that's going to be more showy with more traffic going by on that road.
Could you just go down the list of some more of the plants and some of the flowers? It's fun to hear the names of these wonderful plants.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty colorful bunch of plants. It's kind of part of our local folklore here. We've got swamp milkweed, which you know, one of the growers wants to change that name to rose milkweed for marketability reasons, but I prefer swamp and because it tells a little bit more, well, where to put it.
Yeah.
Ditch bottom is great for that thing. Purple prairie clover. You know, there are several legumes that are part of the prairie flora, and they all make excellent habitat, food and cover. Rattlesnake master, I'm sure that's one you were hoping I'd mention.
Yes.
Compass plant, oxeye sunflower, black-eyed Susan, of course, and lead plant. That one, you know, over in the Galena area where they have those hills and do some lead mining, they found lead under the hills where that plant happened to be.
Oh, I see.
An association formed in somebody's mind. Butterfly milkweed, Canada milk vetch, white wild indigo, showy tick trefoil, round-headed bush clover, rough blazing star, stiff goldenrod, foxglove, penstemon. Yeah, how long do you want me to? Ohio spiderwort. You know, and some of these have other names. I showed my mother, my 85-year-old mother, a spiderwort plant, and she said, well, when we grew up, we called that snotweed, and she's right. That's listed a little further down the page as some local color type names. It, a little bit of resin oozes out of the side of that stem.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
Other people call it cow slobber. It gets...
But these are all native Iowas, or at least in the upper Midwest, native plants, right?
Right.
Well, let's say County X just, you know, plants a couple of acres of these seeds, and you say they're perennials. So did they, I mean, how do they, how will they look after 3 or 4 or 5 years? Do they need a lot of maintenance? I mean, will normal old, regular old weeds start to take over at some point?
Well, you will have a kind of a weedy appearance that very first year. The prairie plants are putting down their roots and very little above ground growth. And so the weed seed that's in that roadside will tend to grow. Ideally, you mow it the first year and keep those down. But then over time, you know, the prairie species will become more and more prominent. The second year, you'll see a few things blooming. You'll see some puny little prairie grass plants starting to become visible. By the third year, those grass plants become more conspicuous, and it actually might be the planting might be its most colorful still in the second and third year, because some of the quicker establishing things, black-eyed Susans and yellow coneflower and oxeye sunflower, you know, they get going right away and give you some nice color early on. Some of the grasses are actually slower and work their way in and become more of a balanced part of the prairie. And they have their own physical appeal, though. I love the, you know, the rich colors of the native grasses in the fall. That's a much warmer look to the right-of-way than the old traditional cool season grass that just kind of turns a very dead, colorless look like your lawn does in the wintertime.
We need to take a short break on Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese speaking with Kirk Henderson, Roadside Project Manager for the UNI Tallgrass Prairie Center. We'll continue our conversation in a minute here on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese talking to Kirk Henderson, Roadside Program Manager for the UNI Tallgrass Prairie Center, University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. A whole bunch of county roadside managers from across the state are pulling into the UNI campus to pick up their allotment of prairie grass and wildflower seeds, almost $250,000 worth of seeds, which will be planted at various locations around the state. Kirk, how many counties are represented? Have you kept track of this?
We'll have 45 or 46 possibly. There's one county that contacted me late, hoping that there'll be a little bit left over. They can pick up the next day. But this year, 45 counties. Some years it's 55 counties. But it's about 50, you know, 45 to 50 counties that come pretty regularly each year and have gotten seed most of the 13 years since this funding became available. But there are other, you know, another 30 counties that have gotten seed at least once, maybe two or three times, and they just don't have somebody on staff who's real passionate about it. And that's what it takes. you know, the someone under the engineer, usually in the secondary road department, they, you know, the seed is free to them, and they can even get funding to help buy equipment to help manage it. But, you know, still can't force it on people. If they're not interested, then there's no point in coming and taking the seed, because it does need to be planted properly and looked after, you know, somewhat. It's not maintenance free.
Okay, so what's involved in planting it? You say it has to be bare ground.
Right. Well, you can, you know, it doesn't have to be bare ground. Most of these county plantings are into bare soil, and that makes it a little easier. When it's bare soil, you can broadcast seed, or what the counties are really into these days is hydro seeding. They're getting help from Iowa DOT through the Living Roadway Trust Fund to purchase a hydro seeder, and then they just mix the seed and some mulch in a tank of maybe 800 gallons of water, and they can drive along the shoulder of the road and blast that slurry onto the slopes and seed the slopes without having to drive on them with a tractor, you know, which can be kind of dangerous.
What about individuals who maybe are listening and thinking, gee, I'd love to get my hands on some of this seed? Obviously, your program is giving this seed to counties across the state for public right-of-way and so forth. What about individuals? Can they get their hands on some of the seed mixture?
You know, if there's a landowner out there who lives along a county road and wishes their county would plant that roadside for them, the one that goes by their house, they can call the county engineer and see what they say. They might get lucky, and it'll be one of the counties that picked up some seed here, and they can arrange for that to happen. If their county isn't involved in this program, if their county doesn't come here and pick up the free seed, they might encourage their county engineer or a member of their board of supervisors to get involved. But, you know, getting back to your landowner or your individual question, if somebody, you know, a lot of people are planting prairie on their land, whether they've got a 20 acres of CRP, of, you know, of farmland that they want to restore, just a small area in town in their backyard. There's a lot of people planting native plants anymore. There are nurseries in the state to contact where they can buy the seed. Some of these species of the wildflowers don't establish quite as readily from seed. And so those are the ones I would go buy, some shooting star, prairie smoke. So, you know, use your live plant budget to buy some things like prairie smoke and shooting star, and maybe some Turk's cap lilies from some of these nurseries that carry the live plants. And, you know, you can make your small planting a lot more colorful and more interesting going about it that way. Just be ready. It's like you say, it's a little bit wild and uncontrolled. Don't go into it expecting anything. Leave your mind a little bit open for some chaos, because it is bringing a small amount of wilderness into your yard. They're not going to escape and be popping up all over the place too much, but it's just not as predictable a thing as a common garden.
Yeah. One of my problems is I can't often tell the difference between a weed and, you know, what's supposed to be. I mean, when you say a bunch of weeds are growing, well, maybe some of those weeds are native Iowa plants. I mean,
yeah, well, people, we don't know. That's kind of the shame of it. We all grew up having so little knowledge of our native plants, and luckily there's a pretty good movement where more and more people are learning to recognize them. Sometimes, you know, we get lots of calls from people who did a planting, and they really want you to come out and look at it mm-hmm. for them. Tell them what they've got. How did it do? What's that? You know, because, yeah, there is some learning that goes on along the way.
When you drive down the interstate, I mean, it's a much different picture If you go down I-80, for example, through Iowa than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, you see it's a more beautiful drive. You're seeing flowers. This is not exactly the same thing as prairie grass and wildflower restoration, but it's something along those lines that the DOT is doing, isn't it?
Yeah. We tend to say in roadsides, we say, well, we're not really doing prairie restoration. We are using native vegetation to serve a roadside purpose. Now, that makes it sound, it's a lot more functional. These plants really do have a lot of functionality to them for conservation and maintenance reduction. At the same time, though, it is beautification. It does make the roadside more interesting. And, you know, many of Iowa DOT's roadside plantings, they are as diverse and look, you know, are as nice of a prairie restoration as just about what anyone else is doing.
Will we ever get the entire state beautified, the roadways beautified at some point, if we keep making all this progress? What do you think?
Well, the state's going to come a lot closer sooner than the counties are. They've been going at it very aggressively, and not just bare soil, but converting traditional vegetation over to native. And I can't tell you what percentage they've done, but they might be approaching about 30% or somewhere in that range. And they're not going to try to do 100%. They've identified the areas that are most suited to prairie restoration. There are some other areas where, for various reasons, they're not even going to try. Some areas wouldn't work as well, and wouldn't seem quite as appropriate. But they're hoping to get, you know, I think most of state right of way eventually, and the counties, there's no reason not to. It's just that there's a 500,000 acres of vegetated right of way along our county road system. You know, we have an incredible number of miles of roads.
Yeah, we sure
in this
do.
State, and that amounts to a lot of acres. And you know, we're moving along at about 1,200 acres a year at the county level. So I don't think I'll see that day. We had some great results from the University of Kansas did some research just a couple years ago that showed the value of these plantings to our to the pollinators, the bees especially. They in a even just a narrow county roadside planted to prairie grass and wildflowers, they found twice as many bees using mm-hmm. that right of way as the non-native roadsides.
That's very exciting. It's what's
well,
good.
It is.
What's
I
good
mean,
for the bees is good for all of us, I think we could say. Right. We need more bees.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wish you very well with this this program of dispersing these thousands of pounds of native seeds to be planted around Iowa, restoring native species, prairie grass, wildflowers. A wonderful idea. Kirk, thanks a lot. Good luck with the program.
Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate the time.
Kirk Henderson is Roadside Program Manager at the Tallgrass Prairie Center. For more information about the Prairie Grass and Wildflower Seed Program, go to www.uni.edu/IRVM. Coming up after the break, making art out of river junk. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese. After a devastating flood in Iowa in 2008, people are trying to put the whole thing into perspective. Art can provide an emotional catharsis of sorts. After Hurricane Katrina, Louisiana artist Brian Guidry, curator of the Acadiana Center for the Arts in Lafayette, Louisiana, put together a massive installation of art objects related to the hurricane. And now Guidry has traveled to Cedar Rapids to put together another installation, this one evoking the power of nature and the mysteries of the Cedar River. He's an artist in residence this week at CSPS in Cedar Rapids. Brian, I want to ask you about Slipstream. Can you describe what it is?
The initial project I did in Lafayette, Louisiana, which I
Well, you used a lot of objects, but yeah. What sort of objects?
I guess the project came about with all of the flooding that came about with Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita, which struck Louisiana in 2005. I traveled. A friend of mine worked with Lafayette Downtown Development, and I went to visit because they go out on the river and take out objects, and I was objects from the river, and I was completely surprised by all of the stuff that they get from the river. So I always wanted to do something with these objects, and so my idea sort of came together for the project Slipstream, which involved going into the river or intercepting the objects and bringing them into a studio, and I painted them. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to sort of camouflage them in a way, but I also, there's so many ideas involved. I often say that I don't have one message for the installation, that I want people to come to it, because part of the installation involves an edited video of several episodes of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
Hosted by Marlon Perkins.
Yes, of course, which I think debuted in 1959, I believe.
Well, I have to ask you about that before we move on. Why your interest in this this old series that's, by today's standards, is sort of, you know, dated and a bit corny, I suppose. I don't know.
Right, yeah. No, I remember when I was a kid, I remember on Sunday afternoons just the sound that when it came on, da, 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 you know, and it's like, I remember going and my grandparents and sitting on the sofa with them, and everything was going to be okay, you know. Sundays was, you know, for me always kind of melancholy, which I love melancholy, but you know, this was sort of a release, and it was, you know, everything was going to be okay.
I always felt that way too, sort of. It was a relaxing, pleasing sort of experience, and Marlon was always kind of a nice guy, and
so it was Jim. Don't forget Jim, who was
Jim.
Jim a bit Fowler. More younger and adventurous, who would go out and actually wrestle with the animals a little bit.
And yeah. It was never very threatening. It was always, I mean, nobody was ever killed or anything. It was all sort of at a certain distance, but anyway.
Right, yeah. They had a couple of episodes, though, with an anaconda that wrapped himself pretty tightly around Marlon. Which was kind of funny, but what I did was I always loved this video, not the video, but the series. I think because of its soothingness and all, but it's also, you know, I always found it funny in these kind of animal kingdom productions where they, you know, they project human emotions on animals, and I always thought that was, you know, odd and not.
But you were removing all the audio narration.
Yeah, what I did is I systematically went through the audio, went through the video and audio. I actually edited it by looking at the audio highs and lows in relationship to the voices, mm-hmm. and I just removed the audio and then squeezed the two together. So the piece sort of goes about with really hard edges and awkward clips or segments. It's really segmented. And I didn't remove any of the music because I like the music sort of is a, I guess it is a human, it imposes some kind of emotion on the situation. But the narration to me was, in a way, it was sort of like what I was doing with the objects by painting them all. I was sort of masking something out and leaving these textures of objects. And the objects were sort of like vestiges of human, I don't know, detritus or...
We'll get back to the installation. I just want to introduce Mel Andringa, who's also here in the studio, producing director, Legion Arts, CSPS, in Cedar Rapids. Mel, you were gesturing a lot during the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom discussion, but what are your thoughts about using this?
I mean, in some ways, there's a... what I've seen of, I've seen a video of his previous installation and photographs of it as well. So I have a little bit better picture of what we're talking about. My partner John Herbert, who is who basically does the booking of things and the curating of our exhibits program as well, saw this installation and was really moved by it in Lafayette and decided a couple of years ago that we that if we had a chance we'd bring Brian up to Cedar Rapids to do a similar project. And then we had this whole flooding situation, and it seemed a lot more relevant, the fact that he was taking things out of the river, and the river had, in ways, taken a lot of things from us and moved them one way and another, or brought things to us, like behind CSPS. We had a deck that floated in from somebody's back porch, and it seemed the project seemed to grow in more relevance. And then just there's so many artists these days, it seems to me, that are really in concern for the environment, concern for the natural world versus the man-made world, and what's the relationship between the two things, that Brian's work seems to address some of those issues in a visual way and a poetic way, rather than in a didactic way or some, you know, it's like it has this strong message. It's something you have to experience, and you have to come to terms with it on your, you know, by trying to puzzle it out as you, you know, in this environment. It's an actual location. It's a displaced location. The things came from someplace else, but the same is true when they were in the river. They came from some other place, and they're brought into the gallery, and they have this. You have this sense of a new environment that you have to kind of look for relationships between the objects, and then of course you're given this other information as well about the not so natural world of the wild kingdom.
Right, right.
Brian, you call this slipstream and installation. I mean, how do you define installation? What does that mean?
I guess it's sort of I'm creating an environment that you walk into. I mean, it could be seen as a painting as well. But installation in terms of a space, a physical space that you walk into. And once you walk into it, all around you're surrounded by...
Physically, how big is this?
This particular installation?
Yeah.
Gosh, in terms of
our
the size?
Room is 30 by 45 with 20-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's
pretty big space.
Yeah, it's a big space.
It's a pretty big space, yeah. And I've been collecting. I have already got one truckload yesterday. Amazingly, it took just an hour and a half for me to fill up a 15-foot rental truck with objects. I got two 55-gallon drums, dozens of pieces of planks of wood, a lot of plastic, balls.
Now, all of this stuff has been in the Cedar River, in the Cedar Rapids area. It could have come from as far north as Minnesota, I suppose, at some point.
Right.
I don't know. But how do you tell us how you actually go about collecting it? Because you can't just – it's a dangerous river. You can't just wade in and start grabbing plastic objects.
Right. Well, actually, there's really nothing. You can't really see anything in the river. If it's moving, it's a really fast-moving river, actually. Most of these things have been deposited on the banks already.
Oh, okay.
So I'm kind of walking the banks, you know. And actually, I've walked up into the woodland areas. And, I mean, the cedar flooded so far. I mean, I was driving off... I'm not even sure where I was at, but I mean, there was objects in the fields, plastic objects.
Really?
Yeah.
And they've been sitting there since the flood of 2008 for the most part, you think?
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the areas I walked, I know that they were there since the flood.
I think there's also this element that really attracts us about the idea of Brian coming up here is that he's making this out of local materials. Maybe they came from some other place, but they're here. They're specific to this location. It's a little bit different from an artist who's shipping us a show from Philadelphia of paintings that they did in their studio there. And this is an actual residency. He's coming here. He's interacting with the community. He's getting various volunteers to help him, you know, pull out this stuff and help him. He's got a warehouse where he's spray painting these objects. We're putting it together in the galleries. We have to haul it up 23 steps. There's a lot of physical interaction and creating this piece on the site out of the materials that he doesn't know beforehand exactly what they'll be. Right. And to us, that kind of artist's relationship to a community is different than the artist who ships it here, maybe shows up at the opening and goes back away and doesn't really kind of interface with the community.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese talking today to Louisiana artist Brian Guidry and Mel Andringa from CSPS in Cedar Rapids. Brian is creating an installation called Slipstream, and the grand opening in Cedar Rapids coming up on Saturday, April 17th. We'll talk just a bit more about that in a minute. Brian, this stuff that you pick up has to be pretty dirty. I mean, is the first thing you do when you find an old couch you want to use, or maybe you're not using stuff that's quite that big, but you have to get it somehow clean, don't you?
Right. Yeah, I actually have a couple of objects that big. And, generally I would wash it off. For this particular installation, I'm going to probably use a brush and try to get off as much debris as I can. Some of the debris will just, you know, be part of the installation. But, I am encountering a lot of mud and I'm kind of weary of ticks that I've heard to beware of.
It's not too early, I suppose, for
ticks. I guess. And the color that I chose was from a native prairie grass that a friend of mine, a fellow artist who lives in Cedar Rapids, Vaslav Hasek, he has a collection of native seeds, and he's growing these a prairie grass. So I have sampled that for the color that I'm using in the installation.
So how would you describe the color then?
Sort of vapid beige color.
Yeah, slightly straw-like, but it's also kind of greenish gray. It's this particular color. And when he says he's Brian is a painter who makes paintings as well. But in this case, he's only using one color, this specific color that he's identified locally. A little bit like the walls in the studio here, he's spraying all these objects uniformly with the same color paint.
Right, and it's slightly warm. It's a warm straw color, dried grass.
Okay, so you're going to be done with this by Saturday in time for the grand opening. So where are you right now? Just a couple of days left. Where are you now in your work? You've probably gathered all of these items that have been in the river, and you're doing your painting. And
yeah, they're sprayed. I'm going to be getting a couple of volunteers to help me bring them up to the second floor of CSPS and do the installation and do the final touches in the space.
A lot of it is also going to require careful lighting and controlling them, because we have to have the video showing as well in the room. It's a rather large video projection. And we've also, because this is the last show ever in the galleries as they currently exist before a major renovation at CSPS, we're going to be painting the walls and doing whatever Brian wants to create the environment that he needs to make this installation.
Right. And so how long will it actually stay up?
Probably till the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And then at that point, we will definitely be underway with our renovations.
Yeah, yeah.
I should also say that, you know, one of the main things that strands that is moves throughout all of my work is the idea of technology and the manipulation of nature. And I think this project is similar in that way.
Okay, so you had a similar installation in Louisiana at your Center for the Arts.
Yeah, Acadiana Center for the Arts.
And so this is your second one.
This is the second one that is similar in nature, I guess, using the video as well as the objects gleaned from a body of water of sorts. I did a similar installation in New Orleans in 2008, and it was a little different in that one. In in this installation, I actually took it was actually in the French Quarter that I installed it, and I put speakers in all of the objects, and it was an outdoors installation, and the speakers broadcasted a 24-hour edited laugh track that I edited. And I edited to sort of mimic the ebb and the flow of the sea or the water's edge.
What do you want people to learn about, in this case, the Cedar River from Slipstream? That it's full of junk, or
I think
the power of the flood to disperse all these objects way far away.
Yeah, I hope that everyone comes to the installation and has their own forms their own opinions about the objects that they see. You know, in a former installation that I did, I had a lot of batteries, you know, a lot of, you know, just all these objects. It's just amazing that these things wind up in the river, and the rivers are, you know, part of, you know, people don't realize how connected we are to everyone. The whole world is connected. And this is our life. This is part of us, the rivers, the earth.
Have they thrown all this stuff in the river, or is it some of it the result of the flood where homes were actually washed away?
All of the objects are not things thrown in deliberately. Things left in people's yards that the water comes up and takes it away, and especially from the flood, I mean, you know.
It is sort of interesting if the rivers were to be drained of what's down there on all of the bottom of the river.
And it's probably stuff that's been there colored for years. The same color, too. But, what occurred to me, and from several artists that have come up from Louisiana that have been really interesting to us to talk about, you know, the disaster and so forth, and what is frequently the general public's reaction to a disaster is they want to get past it. They want to skip ahead of it. The problem is then the next disaster is still ahead of you. And a lot of people want to kind of get back to where they were before the disaster, because then the problem is it actually ahead of you, because you know you've got your old microwave back, you've got identical things on the wall, but it's still like the experience is still ahead of you. Artists tend to deal with to make their work about that experience, and everybody else seems to try to be avoiding that. And it seems like artists focus on that, you know, on something was taken from me, or something was taken from the culture at this particular time, and we're going to wrestle with it to make it give us something back. And to that dealing with the experience is something that any psychologist will tell you is a necessary part of being able to move on from it. But artists intuitively know that. They know that a big experience is something that you need to wrestle with and make some art out of.
Brian, where do you head next? To Cedar Rapids when you're done with your Slipstream? You're heading back to Louisiana then, and you got some other projects in mind?
Back to Louisiana. I have a couple of exhibits coming up in New Orleans, Louisiana.
You just describe them briefly.
Just a painting show.
Uh-huh.
Some of my paintings in the exhibition. Sorry, I'm not so good. No. I'm not a great speaker.
No, that's fine. So you're a painter too.
Yeah. Also, yeah.
Sometimes shaped canvases, sort of shield-like, with various geometric designs on them. He's not a painter. Like a landscape painter.
Yeah. In my paintings, I also sample color a lot. In fact, all the color that I use in my paintings have been sampled from the environment. Usually leaves, grass, lichen. And then I take these samples into the studio and mix larger amounts.
Uh-huh.
And I use these specifically. They sort of give me a boundaries to use. Even though when you have these limits, you have endless possibilities with those.
Well, so anyway, so we have coming up Saturday, April 17th. Mel, do you want to describe the event on Saturday?
Well, there is a kind of general, the area of Cedar Rapids we're in is called New Bohemia, and there's a general environmental concerns there. We've got products like Ecolips there. We've got we've got a lot of recycling of old buildings, and we're having a kind of eco fest with events happening between 10 and 4 during the day. Actually, at 10 o'clock, we're going to have a little artist brunch right to start things off so that people, other artists can have a chance to meet Brian. But they will be open all afternoon as well, and he'll be in the around to talk to people about this or to listen to people, what they have to say about his work.
Brian Guidry, Mel Andringa, thanks so very much. It's exciting. Look forward to seeing it, and thanks for the conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brian Guidry is curator of the Acadiana Center for the Arts in Lafayette, Louisiana. Mel Andringa is the producing director of CSPS Legion Arts in Cedar Rapids. Guidry's installation called Slipstream is nearing completion, and on Saturday from 10 to 4, Guidry will be in the CSPS Gallery at 1103 3rd Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids to discuss his project at a public reception. It's being held in conjunction with CR Recycle Eco Art Fest. That's Talk of Iowa for today. I'm Dennis Reese, Talk of Iowa, production of Iowa Public Radio News.
Moody River, more deadly than the vainest night. Moody River, your muddy water took my baby's life.